Ladies and gentlemen, storytellers of all ages, lend your ears to co-hosts Brad and Philip as we delve into the Marketing Your Attraction podcast.
Welcome to episode 27 of the Marketing Your Attraction podcast. I'm your host, Brad. I'm joined by Philip, and we are deep into the Halloween season already, even though it's only September 16th. Philip, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. I'm getting excited, pre-gaming for Halloween. I had a candy apple earlier, and I'm going to carve a pumpkin.
Nice. Yeah, I had pumpkin spice cinnamon rolls today, so I'm definitely in the spirit. Burning a pumpkin spice candle right now. And we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, but it is just incredible how fast Halloween has come this year. There's so many attractions that are already open. And that's one of the first things we wanted to talk about in our quick takes, our news section here at the top of the show, is the Halloween season just keeps starting earlier and earlier and earlier. When did Walt Disney World kick off their Halloween? I think it was back in August, right?
Yeah, they kicked it off very early. You know, they had decorations up and Halloween time started. And Disneyland at least has done a very good job selling out most of their nights already. So it looks like we're going to have another 100% sellout for all of their Mickey's Halloween party, at least in California.
Yeah. So, whew. Which is, you know, 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, you never would have expected Halloween to be starting in late August and then selling out even before October, gets here for a lot of different events.
Yeah. And there's a lot of spreading too. I mean, you know, Halloween is definitely has its roots in America. It's not a international holiday. And it's interesting. Some of the news, quick news mentions in here are the Festival of Terror at Six Flags Mexico City opened on September 12th, which is very early. It's even earlier than the Halloween Horror Nights September 15th opening here in the States. And they added 10 nights to their run, which is a huge add. And they're operating all the way through November 11th.
Wow. Gosh, that's a really long season.
And we have Halloween weekends in Cedar Point in Ohio. I went to lurk on the decorations actually this last weekend, all the ones that were up early. But it opened this weekend with Horror Nights as well. So that's pretty early, you know, for Cedar Point to be opening in Ohio. You know, like in Ohio, this isn't even a mecca of a theme park competition, and they're opening that early. And of course, Knott's getting ready to open this coming weekend. I was mentioning to Brad that it's almost like when you look at like Dark Harbor at Queen Mary, their opening night is September 28th. When you look at September 28th, feels late now. It feels like, you know, I was like, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to make it to them because they opened so late in the season.
Yeah, and I was amazed at the crowds at Horror Nights. I didn't personally attend, but just looking on social media, how busy it was. I think, you know, them adding Stranger Things and a lot of the other IP, and it's just such a huge brand, just on its own. Horror Nights is a huge brand that not only are they opening this early in the season, but they're very, very busy this early in the season. They already added two additional dates to their calendar this year. I'm pretty sure they're going to have way more nights than ever before, which is incredible. And who knows, they might add more as the season goes on. So I know they've done that in previous years. And I know Halloween weekends at Cedar Point, like you mentioned, really popular event that sold out a number of times last year. And I wouldn't be surprised if it continues to sell out this year, as long as the weather's good out there. And I wonder if weather might play a factor in some of the larger attractions too, sort of hedging their bets by expanding the season and, you know, having more chances at, you know, decent weather. The one thing that, you know, I haven't really seen is, you know, smaller attractions don't typically open too early. A couple of the smaller attractions I've been keeping my eye on, they really seem to open and do most of their business in October. And I wonder if the Halloween season will ever be, you know, big enough for, you know, not the Cedar Points and the Universals of the world and the Disneys of the world, but you know, your mom and pop haunted house and, you know, different mall haunted houses, you know, semi-professional, professional haunted houses to be able to extend their season out. Have you seen any of that, Phil?
Yeah. What I think we're increasingly seeing, I'm actually not sure if this is good or bad. I have really no idea. It's just, it's definitely become more pronounced. There is a widening gap between your commercial Halloween events, typically at theme parks or those large commercial areas, and then all of the other independent and all the festivals and all those items. It's a huge gap, especially now if you're getting early September and even in Disney's case in August, but then you don't get some of these even larger pro haunts opening until October 5th, October 10th. And then your festivals and your you know, community and those type of Halloween events not opening until the weekend of Halloween. You know, that's, you know, months of difference, you know, in some of those cases, a month and a half difference. So it's a big, big gap. And I don't know if what that's going to do, but I foresee that's going to get more exacerbated and not less. And potentially it's a good thing because it allows for you to see all of the commercial attractions and then, you know, not have to, you know, that basically the commercial attractions are not, and the pro haunts are not competing for the same weekend, potentially. Or it could just backfire if you get into that idea of, you know, people that buy the frequent fear pass to Horror Nights and then they're going to go Halloween weekend because they already have tickets bought for it. So, you know, that their logic is, you know, we don't need to pay any extra money to do this versus if we want to go to the pro haunt, it's like $30 and then we have to stand 4-hour line.
Right. No, that's a great point. That's definitely something to keep an eye on as the Halloween season, you know, continues to become a bigger and bigger and bigger business.
And it, just a few more I wanted to mention, you know, of course the, Universal in Singapore, doing expanded events there, and in Hong Kong, Halloween at the Disneyland Hong Kong, they do that. Their Halloween is gonna get in full swing pretty soon there as well too, and they have some additional entertainment that we don't really see here in the States. And Ocean Park just sent out their press release. Ocean Park is It's a park in Hong Kong, about 30 minutes away from Hong Kong Disneyland. You sent out their press release, and their event looks like they have a very large event this year with a lot of commercial investment and a lot of new technology, not just VR, but also, you know, they have a train thing that they're installing in, and then they have a VR system they're putting in, and they have some other tech that they're debuting there. On the independent side, there's a TerraVault opening up in October 10th in San Francisco at the Mint. One interesting thing I thought was really interesting was in Plant City, which is close to Orlando. Sir Henry's Haunted Trail and Ominous Descent are actually teaming up to create a kind of a theme park, premier fear park kind of environment. So they're merging their two properties together and kind of enclosing it into a screen park, and they're giving an extended run. So they're operating all the weekends in October. And then, so I thought that was very kind of interesting where you see like smaller haunts teaming up together. In Illinois, Haunted Illinois has launched a mobile friendly Halloween event directory. Urban Death is coming back for extended nights. Ghost Train is coming back. Halloween Town Celebration in St. Helens is coming back. Now Nightmares is coming back, premiering in mid-October. 17th Door released a new maze called Crybaby, and they're opening actually pretty soon, in a few weeks. So, as you can tell, all I've been doing these past few weeks is writing news releases and telling them out. So we'll put a link to all the news that we're covering for the Halloween season. So if anyone's curious about some of the stuff, you can read more into it. But it's happening. We're in the middle of it.
Yeah, no, it's interesting that you mentioned the you know smaller attractions kind of teaming up, because I know here in Orange County there's a I think it's called Horror World that's at a
it's Horror World mall. Into the Black.
Yeah, Into the Black and a couple other attractions are teaming up on that one. Which is definitely something to watch out there, and maybe it makes a lot of sense in these smaller attractions that had to each get their own leases and each do their own marketing. And you know, maybe if, as a consumer or a guest, you don't want to drive all the way just for like a 20-minute experience.
Yeah,
makes a lot of sense to have all these haunted houses join together and offer a lot more value.
Yeah,
and hopefully reduce costs. So I'm excited to see how that works out, because at least here in Orange County, I can't recall a haunted house is doing that before.
There's in that vein, well, in the vein of opening early, Hush is opening September 22nd in Michigan, which is a very long run, actually. If you look at it in that vein, that runs almost as long as some of your professional theme park haunted houses, which is crazy. And in the vein of teaming up, most of the haunts around the Philadelphia and Jersey area have joined together to do a combined website directory map that kind of shows the operating hours and distance and kind of like in SoCal. If you guys haven't seen this, there's a SoCal haunt list that lists a lot of the independent and home haunts and walk through like yard displays and whatnot happening in all of Southern California. So a lot of the very large attractions in those states have pooled together to create combined marketing campaigns that drive people between them. So it's just very interesting stuff that's really starting this week and just going to be gaining in momentum as we get closer to Halloween.
Yeah, no, we're already in the thick of the season here. There's a lot of great haunts out there, a lot of great attractions out there to check out, and I'm hoping to get to as many as I can. I have a list of like 15 already. We'll see how many I get to. I know, as always, Philip, you'll get to a lot more than me, and a lot more. I know you're planning to go to Hong Kong Disneyland and to haunts all over the country. So hopefully, you'll be able to report back on some of those visits here on the podcast. Speaking of this time of the year, as haunted attractions are beginning to open and, you know, seasonal attractions of all kinds always have this big, big issue with hiring and staffing. And so that's our main topic for this week, is what's marketing's role in recruiting, whether that's, you know, whether you're a one person marketing department, whether you have an entire marketing department, whether you are both marketing and HR, no matter the size of your attraction, you know, how can either marketing's philosophy or the marketing department play a role in hiring? And before we dive into the topic, what made me think about this topic was Six Flags Great America, located just outside of Chicago, announced a really interesting way to increase applicant flow for their seasonal attractions. They are offering a free ticket for anyone that interviews for any of their Halloween job openings. I thought that was a really interesting idea. I saw it pop up on LinkedIn. We have a link to the Chicago Tribune article. They received a lot of PR about it, and you know, it remains to be seen whether it increased applicant flow for them, but. You know, it's a clever idea, because it's such a hard thing to do is hiring seasonal workers in this economy in particular, because the unemployment rate is so low. I know when I worked at Knott's Berry Farm for a few years, it was always difficult to hire, and that was despite having almost 50 years of legacy in the Scary Farm Halloween business. And having generations of Scary Farm monsters who would come back year after year after year and spread the word about it, it's still a challenge. You know, when you're staffing hundreds, thousands, in the case of Disney or Universal, thousands of staff for these events, and they only run 1 to 3 months, it can be a really big challenge. So we wanted to kind of talk about a few ways that you can kind of use marketing and have marketing and HR team up to help get the word out there, make hiring and recruiting easier for your seasonal attraction.
This has been something that's also been on my mind for a different reason. The September issue of the Seasonal Entertainment Source delved into the topic of gritty teams and gritty teamwork. And essentially the entire issue was devoted to this problem that seasonal attractions have, which is your seasonal hiring. You know, it's all these activities that we want to do require warm bodies to do it. And it's actually this kind of staffing is one of the largest problems faced by seasonal attractions. So we did a full article on it, and we got some HR experts to weigh in on not just about your hiring, but how you make the team work stronger. So I've been thinking about this for a while. And as Brad mentioned, it is more difficult. I mean, it's a good thing that we have unemployment, being so low, but then when you're trying to hire a lot of these positions, that can get in the way of getting some of these. So we're not necessarily talking about recruiting from the HR standpoint. We're more talking about what marketing's intersection of that is. And I think there's a lot of attractions that don't understand that there should be an intersection. And, I guess you guys take this with a grain of salt if you want. But I believe that marketing as the strategic and as kind of the figurehead of the organization really is involved in most of the business aspects. Because marketing is looking at the business from a strategic standpoint, you're looking at it from all of those dimensions. So, and because of that, you are in a way related, or should be working with the HR department, because basically it is our job to communicate what we do in a way that is understandable and differentiated enough from our competitors and then to the proper people that matter, right? So that's kind of half the battle almost when it comes to HR, is communicating who should, basically communicating the culture and communicating the job and communicating the genre of work. Well, communicating those elements is a piece of what we do as marketers, because, that's essentially when we're sitting down and we're making our target markets and who we're trying to go after and what we're trying to build and where we differentiate ourselves. We've kind of already thought about all of these pieces. So there's definitely an intersection here on those strategic elements in terms of, what the explaining who the organization is, who it's for, what we're doing, and what we don't do, and what we do that's different from the major competitors. So I don't think that that's necessarily a piece where you're in there, conducting interviews or you're doing any of those HR roles, but there needs to be kind of this alignment in terms of the culture and how you're positioning the position. We're hiring these types of people and this is our culture and this is what the job is and this is what it isn't and this is what the company stands for and this is what it doesn't. And communicating that effectively is essential from the beginning, because that will, the more time you take to communicate those things, the more money it costs HR. And you need to let people know right up front what sort of organization that you are and what the theme is. Are you the type where, and this especially gets convoluted with scare attractions, right? Because it's kind of one of those things where there's such a perception as to what it's like to work as a scare actor. And then that perception meets reality. that's something that was talked about in one of the articles in the magazine by Margie Kerr. It's kind of this idea of the reality of some of these jobs is really not that appealing. It's like jump out of a corner in a really hot area with no water and potentially have to work in the rain, or, you know, like, it's the realities of it is really not that good. So it's about, you know, understanding that, communicating that, but while still tying it to a larger purpose. And that's really, in my opinion, that's in marketing's vein. It's up to us to support the HR people and, you know, work with them to understand, to make sure that we all are clear as to the overall impact that we're having, that every employee is having. So that's kind of my, I guess, like, my soapbox in terms of marketing's justification for butting into the HR conversation.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, in my experience, I think marketing can help HR, and HR can help marketing a lot too, of you know, kind of telling one another of like, hey, you know what, this is what we're seeing in the market right now. Like, these are people that, you know, that we've targeted that seem interested in working here. You know, that can help drive your marketing efforts too. And then from the marketing side of saying, hey, these are, you know, groups of people who we target, you know, whether it's high schoolers, young adults. I know in my previous experience, we had a lot of scary farm monsters that we found from different, you know, tattoo parlors, acting schools. You know, there's so many different ways that when you put on your marketing cap that you can really think about, okay, who's our existing employment base? Who is our existing fan base? Is there overlap there? And are there missed opportunities on, you know, the marketing side or the HR side where, you know, hey, we're not marketing to this subset of people who HR's had a lot of success bringing in. And then on the HR side, they're maybe not recruiting seasonal, you know, employees from a side that marketing seen, you know, respond really well to ads. And also, I think marketing can just help with, you know, writing, making sure everything's on brand. To your point, Philip, making sure that when you are, you know, posting job openings and when you're communicating what it's like to work at your attraction, that you're elevating it into making them a part of the attraction and a very important part of it, that you're not just saying, hey, you're going to be, you know, you have to be able to lift 50 pounds and work these hours, but, you know, really, you know, amping up what the event is, how important it is, how important their role is, you know, using words like actor or, you know, kind of naming different positions, instead of so matter of fact, but making them more glamorous in name. And just that elevates both their positions in the organization, you know, in the attraction itself, and also to outsiders when they're looking for a job. You know, if it just says, you know, talent or, you know, monster number 101 or something, doesn't talk about like the role or what they're, you know, going to be doing or the legacy of the event, you know, anything that you can pull from to give an applicant a reason to apply and a reason to be proud of working there. And there's a lot of things that I think marketing does that, depending on, you know, your HR department, if it's a smaller attraction or if it's just one person, may not have the, you know, technology or experience to do, is sending out emails. You know, I helped set up a lot of different email programs where you're emailing applicants from the previous year, your employees from the previous year to come back. You're creating an active email list that you're adding to throughout the year. You're adding to this email at different trade shows, and you know, encouraging people, you know, active employees, you're emailing them to refer a friend and have different incentive programs like that. And there's just a lot of, you know, marketing technology, whether you're posting on social media, both organically or doing paid targeted ads. There's a lot of tools that that we have as marketers that, you know, HR may or may not have that same skill set or that same access to tools. And there's no reason that HR is using one set of tools and then marketing is using another. And that's why we really need to bridge that gap between marketing and HR. And depending on the company, that might be a bigger gap than others. But definitely, you know, something to think about is marketing can be a resource for HR, but HR can also be a resource for marketing. I think Disney does a, you know, a great job with the every role is a starring role, where they highlight all of the different positions throughout their theme parks, everything from park services to the vice president of the park to technical roles and acting roles and everything in between. And that's great content for fans to consume. And it's also great content for HR to be able to use to help with recruiting. So those are just kind of a few different ideas of how, this season, hopefully HR and marketing can come together and be able to fill those positions in a really difficult economy for hiring seasonal workers. Philip, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
I just wanted to kind of wrap it up and add that to advise our marketing audience out there, to think of this as, if it helps, think of this as a campaign where essentially it's kind of like you need to go to HR and kind of work with them on making this co-campaign, and your conversion is essentially getting people to fill out the application. So if you think of it like that, I think a lot of what Brad's saying, takes on you can see those dimensions line up. Even something Brad mentioned earlier to me was, in marketing, we've long since mastered how you get people to fill out personal information for any sort of thing, for giveaway, for anything. But, taking that software and translating over it to HR, maybe if HR is still using like paper applications, or they don't have a good way of tracking all that data, or, even little things like helping them make sure that you're retargeting. So if someone did go to look at applying, or even they open up an application for employment and then they got interrupted, or they something distracted them and they got off of that. Are you retargeting those? Essentially think of it as a campaign. You're supporting HR ideally by making this campaign, and what you're trying to do is your conversion is getting people to apply for a position there, and you can use all of the marketing tricks that we have and try and levy them towards creating that. And then kind of to be cognizant too that marketing definitely has a more robust ability and access to talent for creating those assets, to like creating the creative to sell the job to someone, to really fully sell kind of the what it is to work at your attraction. That's marketing. Marketing has all of those assets. They have the ability, they have the talent pool. You have the access to film what it's like to be a scare actor at your attraction at the same time that you're filming. We already have a film crew on site doing that. So, maybe getting some different types of BTS or other types of B-roll to work into a video that explains what it's like to work there, those kind of intersections as well. So
yeah, those are all great points. And this is a little bit more tactical and not necessarily strategy, but I did want to mention Facebook has a really great job ad and also like job post feature that I think they just rolled out earlier this year or maybe late last year, where applicants can actually apply through the Facebook app. And it goes right to your Facebook page. And then you can either put that into your application software, or you can just contact the applicant from there. And it's really great. And in my experience, we saw the applicant numbers, skyrocket, because an applicant didn't have to leave the Facebook app at all to be able to apply. You can put screening questions in there. You can get the personal information all right in the Facebook experience. Because a lot of times if you're going from social media ad or Craigslist ad that's talking about hiring, and you have to click over and go into like a really clunky old application process. Unfortunately, a lot of the job posting software I see out there looks like it hasn't been updated in many, many years, and is more designed for desktop computers than mobile. Not all of them, but a lot of the legacy ones out there. So if you have something like that, or maybe you just don't even have a job application system, and you're looking to streamline that process, definitely check out what Facebook's offering. And you can just Google that. We'll put a link in the show notes to an information page with more more details about that. So that wraps up episode 27, our main topic. Before we go, though, a little bit of information here. Definitely make sure you visit marketingyourattraction.com for blog posts and an archive of past episodes. Since this is episode 27, it only makes sense that we have 26 other episodes. So if you haven't listened to those, definitely check out the website. And we have some really great ones on there, at least in my opinion. In addition to that, I'm working as a side project with a attraction called Jack the Ripper, a virtual reality haunted house, which is a really fun VR haunted house escape experience out in Santa Clarita, California, out here in Southern California. So if you were anywhere in the Los Angeles area and you're interested in checking out a really cool VR experience, go to holozone.com. That's HOLLOWZONE.com. And to learn more about the experience, we'll be talking more about it in future episodes. I'm really excited to kind of use it as a case study as well. I didn't build the attraction. It's being built by Holo Studios, which is the team behind Fear VR at Not Scary Farm a few years ago, and a number of other attractions. And I'm just helping them out with a couple of things on the marketing side. But it's been fun to kind of take a lot of a lot of the different marketing elements that I've used and marketing tactics that I've used at bigger attractions, and now seeing how some work and some don't at a smaller attraction like this, which is located in a in a family fun center and has a much smaller capacity than something like Not Scary Farm. So I'll have more to come on that in future episodes. We'll be able to sort of dissect what's working and what's not with the marketing for that attraction. And make sure you subscribe to our podcast as well. Leave us a review. You can also contact us by going to marketingyourattraction.com. Let us know what future topics you want us to cover, what you want us to talk less about, any questions or anything. There's a contact form on that website where you can reach Philip and I. And lastly, Philip, we can't leave the episode, can't end it until you talk about the Seasonal Entertainment Source magazine.
Yes. So I mentioned the issue earlier, our September issue. We mail out quarterly. So you can go to www.seasonalentertainmentsource.com to subscribe to the physical magazine. And we'll be posting some of the articles from the issue on seasonal hiring and the gritty teams issue, and spreading those out shortly. That we start posting them after the physical copies go out. So as soon as the physical copies start being delivered and people start posting them on Facebook, then I will know they were delivered and we'll start releasing some of the other articles.
Awesome. I look forward to checking it out. Well, thanks for listening to episode 27. We'll see you back with episode 28.